Greetings, cultivators worldwide. Jordan River here, back with more GrowCast. Another day, another harvest. Today, we have OK Calyx back on the line. His last episode was awesome, and it got a lot of great reviews. I know you guys liked it a lot. He was a little crunched for time, so we had him back. This episode is dope. We go more into his KNF practices and composting and JADAM, to be more specific, and all sorts of stuff. You're going to love this episode. OK Calyx will be back on and definitely be on GrowCast TV, I'm sure. Stay tuned for that. Before we get into it with OK Calyx, though, AC Infinity, everybody, the best grow gear in the game. Code GrowCast15 saves you 15% at acinfinity.com. They've got the thick, sturdy tents with the thick canvas and the thick tent poles, the best tents in the game. They've got the fans that you need, the inline fans, the Cloud Ray oscillating fans now. Again, code GrowCast15 for 15% off. The best quality grow gear you can find. They've also got lights and scissors and pots and hangers and so much more. But when it comes to the fans and the tents, there's no one else out there that does it better. The inline fans, the Cloud Line series, are fantastic. The S series is the simple series, still comes with a 10-speed fan controller. And the T series comes with a controller that lets you automatically dial in your temperature and humidity. acinfinity.com, code GrowCast15 for 15% off. They even have grow kits that come with everything you need to expand. Get that second veg tent, get that second flower tent you've been thinking about. Save with the kit and use code GrowCast15, which now works on those kits. Saving you extra money with the best gear in the game, acinfinity.com. They've been our partners for years. We brought these guys along a long time ago. They've really, really expanded and done a great job. acinfinity.com, code GrowCast15. All right, let's get into it with OK Calyx. Thank you for listening and enjoy the program. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in again today. Before we get started, as always, I urge you to tell a grower about the show, turn someone on to growing, check out our membership at growcastpodcast.com/membership, and /classes to see all of our awesome grow classes near you. Today, we are deep into Plant Nutrition July, and we have a return guest back for part two, as promised. We're here to talk about ferments and composting and JADAM and all sorts of fun stuff. OK Calyx is on the line. What's up, OK Calyx?
What's up, my friend Jordan? How are you, brother?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Listen, your first episode was a hit. Everybody loved you coming on the show. People loving your Instagram page, following everything you do with the breeding. But we barely got into, in fact, we didn't get into at all of your awesome organic work. You're a huge composter. You work with ferments and stuff like that, JADAM. I want to get into all of this today and just dive into like all of your knowledge and how long have you been doing this? Like specifically, not just gardening, but how long have you been doing all the composting and JADAM stuff?
Yeah. So in that first episode, I said when I first started growing legally, it was legal. I used Fox Farm stuff.
Right.
And so starting from there, I had a friend introduce me into a product called Recharge that I'm sure plenty of y'all know about. And that's when I started realizing, oh, this is microbes and, you know, sugars in it and bacteria. And I was looking at it like, man, that's interesting. I have no idea what's going on here, but this is neat stuff. Anyway, I started using that product and it was definitely a good product. I loved it, enjoyed it, still got a bag of it. And that's what got me into doing organics. Because that was the first step, like, oh, there's organic stuff out there, you know, and I can buy organic things. And it's morphed into now I make my own stuff, of course.
Yeah, those homemade inputs.
The reason, that's correct. The reason I got into composting is because it was costing me $25 to fill up, you know, 2 10-gallon bags. And I'm like, golly, it's expensive, man. I'm wanting to grow, you know, I'm wanting to limit out on my plant number, of course. And I'm wanting them big. So I'm using, you know, rather large pots to begin with. Mm-hmm. And it just cost a lot of money to buy dirt. And so I was like, man, I'm just going to start composting out here. And what happened was one summer when they were building a bunch of neighborhoods here in my hometown, the landscapers were going through in these new houses and putting in trees. And the big old, you know, these tree buckets or whatever they would be, they're huge. Uh-huh. They're 45-gallon buckets, and they were hard plastic. And so I grabbed one of those, brought it home, and on my Instagram page, the very, very beginning, you'll see that's what I used. And
free.
So I used that thing. totally free, man. Good. It was big too, and I loaded it with fruit. And there's the fruit market that's by my house, and I constantly am getting. I'm a dumpster diver, man. I have no pride. I will get the food. I don't eat all of it, but sometimes, man, at the fruit market, there's good watermelons and cantaloupes, tomatoes, onions.
Dude, that
and
drives me nuts.
They throw them away just because they have so much product, dude.
Yep.
It drives me crazy. That's a whole nother thing.
Sometimes just because they're deformed. Listen, I don't want to start defending the garbage eaters of the world, but I will. They'll throw them in the garbage not because they're rotten and unfit for consumption. Sometimes they'll be deformed or just fucking just beyond some sort of sale date. I'm like you, man. I'm a street rat.
I am too.
It's good food, man.
You
can't just let that go to waste.
It's good food. That's exactly right. So moving on that. I would go to the fruit markets and any dumpster behind a grocery store, and I just started looking in them. And there are two dumpsters now that I go to every single day because they're right on my drive to work and from work. And when I'm driving home from work, the stores are closed, and so no one's around. Man, I just go back there and load up, and I got lots of pictures on Instagram of dumpster diving. And so I started really using all those fruits and vegetables to try to begin composting. I started adding my leaves and grass, and I just had me a nice little pot of compost. And within, you know, a good 6 months over the summer, it was turning into some really good, dark, good looking aggregated soil. You know, it was really beautiful. Mm. Anyway, I started growing in it, and I grew totally in my own compost one time, and it totally worked. And so that's when I was like, all right, it's on. I'm going to make enough compost that I can grow all of my plant, all my cannabis plants in. And then I can definitely add a lot of compost to my no-till soil beds outside.
Wow.
And now what has happened is my oldest son was working with one of my neighbors over here, just two houses down. She's a widow. And he was cleaning her yard for her one day. And she was like, kid, do you know anybody who wants these compost bins? I've got three big compost bins. And she asked my son if she knew anybody that wanted them. And he immediately comes to me and is like, Dad, you're not going to believe what she's about to give you. So I've got three, they're called home composters, but they're basically big cubic yard worth, which is kind of what you want to keep the heat in when you're composting. You need mass. You need a good pile of stuff to keep heat in. But these things are big enough to really keep the heat up with my composting. So that's how I began composting, to save money on dirt. That is the reason I started.
Fucking right, dude. I think a lot of people want to get into composting, but they're a little bit intimidated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, whether it's just a bin in your backyard or one of the Bokashi bins on your counter, I think it's a great, like you said, leap into this kind of bigger world of making your own inputs, whether it's the compost in your soil or water-soluble calcium from your freaking eggshells or what have you.
So got into composting, and then, you know, I think that's when I got on Instagram, because again, but even before Instagram, man, I was in the dark. Like,
yeah.
I didn't get on Instagram till maybe 2 years ago, I think it was now, but I'm in the dark really. And I had a friend keep telling me, dude, you've got to get on Instagram. You've got to post this stuff. People need to know this and all that. And I was like, man, nobody cares about this. This is dirty and mucky and gross. And it's almost embarrassing the amount of flies I could have back here if I didn't really take care of things. And I didn't almost want to show this.
Yeah.
But then I started doing it, and I was like, I just started showing like, hey, compost videos, here's what I do. And dude, it blew up. People love this stuff. They'd love to learn how to compost because you're really, again, you're not doing a whole lot. You're adding a bunch of stuff in a pile, and then you can add microbes or other things to it to speed the process up. But if you just want to leave a big old pile in your backyard, you know, like a big deal of chicken wire, just a circle of it, some kind of little square box maybe, and just start throwing your food scraps, leaves, and grass in there. Before you know it, you're going to start seeing this nice, rich, humic, black-looking stuff on the bottom. And, man, that is gold to the organic growth.
That's awesome, man.
Like, there's different styles of compost. There's different types of compost. But there, I don't really go for a style. This is just my way of doing it, right? I just started doing it, and it's still going. But I have a lot of fruit and vegetables in mine. And those things break down fast. Fruit, cantaloupe, cucumbers, bacteria love to grow on those things. And good fruits and vegetables make a great compost. Don't overdo the leaves, but add the grass. The green grass, mowed green grass, breaks down quickly into a nice compost. Leaves take a little longer. But yeah, that's something else. We can get into that more specifically.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you want, let me just start talking about composting.
Sure.
So if you put just junk in a pile, if you put fruits and vegetables and leaves in a pile, it's going to compost itself. You can speed the process up by doing certain things and adding certain things, but there's, you know, a process is called static composting. And it's just where you put your fruits, your vegetables, your green materials, which would be freshly cut grass, which would also be fruits and vegetables, green leaves, anything that's still got the, you know, the nitrogen look to it, still green. And then you got the brown side of things, which is the brown leaves, the brown grass, things that are already kind of starting to rot down, things that have a lot of carbon in them and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an idea, like when I compost, there is reason to the madness behind it. I am adding greens, I am adding browns, I am adding vegetables, I am adding bacterias, I am adding mushrooms, trying to get fungal spores in there, mm-hmm. and just all kinds of things. So you don't want to just have a pile of leaves. It'll break down in a few years, but that's not what people are wanting. They're wanting compost in 8 months over a summer, you know, a spring and a summer. So you're going to want to get different layers of things in your compost, the greens, the browns, the veggies. It's very important when you compost that your compost stays moist. And that's one reason I add a lot of vegetables and fruits, because they're loaded with moisture still. And right now I'm looking at my compost bins, and about 6 inches and below, all the holes have just running out with just juice, just gooey stuff. Ooh. And it's all dripping down on the ground, but I've got it covered with leaves and dirt, and I'll scrape that up and put it in my compost or in my J-dam later on. But you want your compost moist. If you don't have compost wet, your microbiology stops working or just isn't present at all.
Right.
And also a lot of the shredders that you want in composting, such as black soldier flies, red wigglers, millipedes, centipedes, things like that, they like a little wetness in there. They don't like it just totally dry. You know, an ant will like it kind of dry. They don't like wetness, but the things you want during composting, they want it moist. You also want moisture in there to create some more heat, you know, because right. when you compost, you're composting, you're wanting, you know, there's certain temperatures that are recommended, and the peak temperature is 150. That is basically recommended by, you know, almost all composting books. 150 you peak out at, and you always want to try to keep it, you know, above 110, 115.
Is it important to take those readings, in your opinion, regularly?
Okay. When you first start composting, if you have the ability to, it's really helpful.
Sure.
Because it's a tangible reading that you can be like, okay, the activity is going on inside
helps
my
when
big
you're
pile
learning.
Of compost.
Okay, good
That's
point.
Correct. So it really helps when you're learning. So I have a compost thermometer, and it always stays in my compost bins. I hardly ever look at it, because I know what's going on by the looks of my compost. You know, what's running out of the side of it? You know, is it gooey? When I open a small door, I put my hand close to it. Am I feeling a good amount of heat in there? Or in the morning time, whenever I might turn a little bit of it, am I seeing some steam come off of it? You know, those are indicators that are telling you the same thing that thermometer is telling you. So after a while, you're like, I don't really need a thermometer, but it's nice to have in there. So I would definitely say get you a thermometer. I know that on Amazon, the one I got is about $25. The longer the thermometer point, you know how the thermometer,
yeah,
the
probe,
the longer the probe, the more expensive it is. And my probe, I think, is a 2-foot probe. And that'll get to the middle of my compost. That's what I want. So moisture is important. Understanding some temperatures is an important thing. Having different types of materials is another thing for composting. Now, what I am doing this year with my composting is I'm not turning it as much. I'm still adding all the fruits and vegetables, the greens and the browns. But this year, I'm trying to do things that are less work for me. And so instead of turning it like weekly, like I did last year, and really just turning, getting in there and seeing what's going on, I've turned it one time since March this year,
Ooh.
And that was just yesterday.
What difference did you notice? I mean, I know that it acts a lot faster, supposedly, when you're doing it versus the static sits there. If you turn it, it's supposed to
That's
go
right.
faster, but you tell me, because that sweat equity, man, it's backbreaking. So what differences
right.
did you notice?
So the differences that I did notice is when you turn it, you're definitely going to get a compost that will be broken up you know, just because of the action of turning and breaking and grinding things together as you're mixing it all together. Because what I saw in my compost is my leaves were perfectly leaf shaped, but they were just super duper thin and webby, you know? And so they stayed piled up a lot. And I was kind of having to bust these leaf piles up a little bit more than normal, but the heat was in there. The shredders were all in there. I kind of liked it the other way a little more. I think next year I'll turn it, you know, probably twice to three times before midsummer. And again, I don't want to work a lot. I just don't want to do that. And that is one thing that I try to do. It's, my wife calls it lazy genius, that they're like, I'm lazy as you can be, but the shortcuts I create are genius. You know, they're off the chart great because it makes your life easy.
Exactly.
And that's the way I want to be. And with composting, it's the same way, because it's back breaking. It's shoulder hurting. Your neck hurts after you're turning and digging and lifting from the bottom.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm getting older. I'm in my 40s now, man. I'm trying to, you know, save my body a little bit. But turning it, I like the look of the compost. I think, but that's going to happen in the end product anyway, whenever I go to, you know, turning it a lot and,
right,
and really getting it mixed
or,
up.
Or just finding that point of diminishing returns where you turn it this many times and then it gets that consistency that you want. Now that you've
mentioned that,
I've seen some composts and some soils that are comprised of compost that have that underturned webby consistency. That was interesting when you said webby. It just made me think back to, like,
yeah,
I feel like I've seen that consistency in compost before, and I didn't know that it was due to lack of turning.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just not getting turned well. You know, I'm sure those big piles get turned big and get turned, you know, hard once, twice a week.
Sure.
But those, what I'm talking about are commercial composters.
Yeah, but in the middle,
big piles.
It might get turned. I see what you're saying.
Might not.
Yeah, exactly.
So might
not get
and
turned.
And of course, the different materials that they use to make the compost also. You know, you got different types of compost. Another direction is you have fungally dominated composts and you have bacteria dominated composts. And you can create these conditions to, you know, increase your fungus or increase the bacteria. And like with fungal bacteria, you want aged brown organic material.
Mm-hmm.
Just brown items, leaves, bark, wood chips, twigs, branches, whatever contains that carbon. And the remaining dead wood that's left that hasn't been chewed up by any kind of bacteria, it's got lignin in it. And lignin is something very difficult to break down, and really only fungus will break it down. And it takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more woody things you have in your compost, the more fungal, the more attraction of fungus you're going to have, because it likes lignin. It likes the long chain stuff. So, you know, if you feel like your soil lacks fungus that you're growing in, you can create a fungally dominated compost that has a lot of those woody, twiggy parts in it. And it takes longer, but after a year or so, you're going to have a really nice fungal compost that you can spread around your plants on your beds, and you're going to increase your fungi. That's all it is. You know, you increase your fungi all over the place. And then the other one is the bacterially dominated compost. And that's more of what I do, Jordan, is a bacterial dominated compost because of all the fruits and veggies and because bacteria acts so much faster than fungus. It will colonize so much faster. It will break things down way faster. It will show up faster. Also, you know, I can propagate bacterial microbes way faster than any kind of fungus at all. And right now I've got a 5-gallon bucket full of, about halfway full of water. I chopped up tomatoes and cantaloupe. Now just put it in there and I added just a splash of BioAg bacteria. And in 3 days, I'm going to have a white film over the top of everything, and it's going to have cultured a bunch, and I'm going to dump that in my compost, you know, just constantly adding more bacteria.
Hell yeah. Just a splash, dude. I love it.
Okay. So I learned this from Jeff Lohnfeld's book, the Teeming with Microbes one. he has the trilogy. That's one of them. Teeming with Microbes is a really good book. Chapter 16 is composting. Chapter 17 is mulch. I know this because I've read the thing multiple times. Now, the idea that I got from him is, and again, it's the big picture of nature, the secessions of nature and how things grow, how a land can start off real barren. But then after time, you know, smaller grasses can move in and have a little bit of growth and start to create a small layer of dirt and then bigger grasses and so on until you have a nice forest, right? And at different stages of nature's growth, bacteria and fungus act differently, right? At the at the beginning of these quicker annual plants, bacteria work well with them because they grow quickly, they do their thing, and then they're done. And bacteria are quick workers. Mm-hmm. But when you get into the bigger evergreens and the tall oaks and things like that, that's when you get into these relationships of mycelium and trees, and they go for miles underground. You know, that took time. That takes a lot of time to establish that. And so it takes time for those bigger trees and things to grow. With cannabis is an annual, right? I mean, you can re-veg it and all that, but it's going to do its thing and be done.
Right.
So the idea that I took, and hopefully I'm not wrong, the idea I took is that with those type of plants, you want a higher bacteria ratio than fungus, because these plants are just going to be in and out quickly. Now, this is if you're growing in pots.
Right.
Let me say that. If you're growing in pots, not living soil, no-till bed, not a place that you're not going to disturb it. You're just going to let it sit there. I'm talking about a pot that's going to be dumped out and used again, or, you know, moved a lot. I use a high bacteria compost because I grow it, you know, 4 months and then I'm done. And I recycle my compost and I'll do stuff like that. But if I had a plant that I was growing for a long time and I want it to have a good established root system in the ground, I'm going to want it to get connected with a lot of mycelium down there, but that takes time. And that's not cannabis, right? Cannabis is a quicker thing. Now, maybe if you're doing a mother for years or something like that and you want a big established root system, you know, then you think more of how am I going to get good root systems with good mycelium help in there? You know, I need the bacteria also, but this is a long-term thing I'm thinking. And so I'm going to be thinking more about fungus in there. But what I do, Jordan, is this. I have a high bacteria compost that I use, number one, because it breaks down quickly. And number two, because of the very reason I just said, to grow in pots and to grow quick plants. What I do, though, is I take my highly dominated bacterial compost and I dump it on top of my highly dominated fungal no-till soil pit.
Oh,
you know what
wow.
I'm saying?
Wow. So it's okay.
And
that's great.
That's where they meet together outside.
That's awesome, man. So you are just getting the maximum biodiversity, which is what I hear a lot of people are trying to achieve. Want that teaming,
that's right.
If you will.
Yeah, and I will.
So where does JetM fit into this?
My understanding is this. The creator of KNF, his son created JetM. So his son's name is Yongsang Cho. You know, you hear people say Master Cho, and that's the guy with KNF that I think I understand it correctly. And then his son, Young Chang, he's the guy that created Jidam. Now, if you read the Jidam book, which I've read it multiple times, studied it a lot because I really want to learn this stuff. The reason he created Jidam, number one, is for an ultra low cost method of farming. Ultra low cost, man. I mean, being able to ultimately spend nothing and close the loop.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that in your natural farming. And so what he and his father did is these KNF and Jidam practices are actually Japanese practices.
Oh, wow.
They studied Japanese methods and they came back and kind of created their Korean style. And the Korean natural farming style was created. And then later on, Yongsang Cho, he comes in and creates Jidam. And he creates it, again, an ultra low cost method of farming. And the people in his mind, the reason he was creating this process, he says in the book, is for poor communist farmers.
Right.
That's why he created this. So the background behind what I'm doing comes from a guy who is saying, how can we use nature in such a way that we're not going to spend any money? And these farmers who have no money to buy extra fertilizer and inputs, how can they be successful, close the loop on their farm and not need anybody from outside? You know, because not because it's cool, but because that's how they're going to eat and live or die. Right. Like
right.
They've got to grow their foods. And just like today's economic crisis and all the junk we're in right now with fertilizer, you know, supposedly coming from Ukraine and Russia, and that's going to start to go up and be more expensive. Jidam and KNF practices are going to just start coming up naturally because people aren't going to be able to afford the fertilizers. I'm right now, Jordan, I'm working with a farmer here in Oklahoma. You're the first person I've told this. I'm working with a farmer here in Oklahoma who is asking me, he saw my Instagram. I go to church with him and he goes, dude, I saw your Instagram. I cannot believe what you're doing. We are wondering if we're going to have enough money to spray our fields this year.
Wow.
I'm like, dude, I have never done this on large scale ever, but we can give it a shot. And so he at home at his place right now, he's got a bunch of cow manure JLF, vetch JLF, grass and crop residue JLF. And I'll explain those in a minute. but he's starting to try it. Not because, again, he thinks it's neat and cool, but it is. But it's because he's like, listen, I'm in a financial hard place. I don't know if I'm going to be able to spray or not. Does this really work? And me, I'm like, good grief. That's kind of a different level of what I'm doing, but I love it. And yes, I'm going to help you. So we're going to try to spray his fields this fall with a lot of JLF and some JDAM microbial solutions and see if we can get his hay fields going to start with for next spring. So that's kind of cool. Something that I'm doing on the outside. What was I talking about? I can't remember.
No, that's amazing, dude. I love that you shared that here. And it's so cool to see, like you said, this is the important thing. If the prices of fertilizers go up, it makes this knowledge more valuable and it's going to turn more people onto it. And then soil microbiology will benefit largely from that scale. But what I wanted to get to was the JLF and these inputs, all these acronyms and initialisms. They're hard to keep track of, but I guess it's better than saying all the long words.
Yeah.
We'll return to the program in just a second, but before that, shout out to the Foop, baby. We have a new product announcement from the Foop, the Veg Pack. That's right. It comes with the Veg 1, the Veg 2, and the Sweetener. Everything your plants need through the veg cycle. You will not need to add any additives. You'll get those thick stalks. My roots are busting. Dark green, vibrant green canopies, and the Sweetener. Yes, we did have the recent Growcast TV guest say that you want as many different types of sugar as you can, and that Sweetener is where it's at. I also think that it's interesting that the Foop recommends that you use the Sweetener in veg. A lot of people recommend that you use it at the end of flower only, but you know that it feeds those beautiful microbes in there and unlocks all those other nutrients that you so why wouldn't you add the Sweetener in veg? Comes in the Veg Pack. Foop is certified organic, OMRI listed. It works great in virtually all growing media. The Veg Pack is now available in 1 gallon sizes on Foop's website or a quart size on Amazon. You can find it at amazon.com/foop or get the larger size at thefoop.com and always use code GROWCAST at thefoop.com for 15% off. No code for Amazon, but it's a much better deal with the 15% off and the larger size. Again, that's amazon.com/thefoop and thefoop.com for the gallon size, Amazon for the quart size. Also, make sure to get on their giveaway. This thing is sick, the Foop Mega Giveaway. It's $1,500 worth of grow gear. It's a full grow setup, light, tent, all that stuff. Just go to foopgiveaway.com. Tell them who you are. That's all you got to do. Again, fans, air filters, a huge tent, a couple of lights. It's everything you need to blow up your favorite room or basement or garage. All you got to do is go to foopgiveaway.com. Be healthy, go organic, use the Foop. And that's what I'm doing right now, and I'm loving it, baby. TheFoop.com, code GROWCAST. Go and try it, everybody. All right, now back to our regularly scheduled programming. Talk to me about the inputs that you're using in this farming style and what JLF is and your advice with it.
Gotcha. So let's begin with the difference between KNF and JDAM. Mm-hmm. KNF uses lots of sugars, right? Brown sugars, molasses, things like that. JDAM has totally steered away from that, not because they think it's bad or anything like that. He'll talk about how molasses might cause too much acidity in your soil and stuff, but the JDAM guy who created JDAM, he's really just trying to say, okay, Koreans didn't have natural molasses 100 years ago or sugarcane or anything like that. Right. We didn't use that to do what we did. So let me get back to the most organic way of doing this that I possibly can. And not use the extra sugars, not use brought in, store-bought materials of any kind, but just take it straight from nature. So that's what he's going for with this JLF, which is called JDAM Liquid Fertilizer. The reason it's called fertilizer is because what you do is you take a bucket of fresh cut anything, greens, grasses, fruits, vegetables, leaves, anything coming from nature that's still got some nutrient in it that hasn't already rotted. Put as much of it as you can in a 5 gallon bucket. Fill the 5 gallon bucket full of water. Take a handful of dried brown leaves. And in the book, he will call this leaf mold or leaf mold soil. But if you look on some old dried leaves or some grass that's starting to turn brown, if you turn it over and look on the bottom, you'll see a little bit of white on there. And that, just call it IMO, right? Indigenous microorganisms. But you're wanting those microbes to get in that 5 gallon bucket. And the only reason you add that handful of brown material is to add a larger, larger population of microbes and get you started a little faster. It'll happen naturally if you put the brown material in or not. If you just put water and fruit and vegetables in a bucket, it's going to start fermenting and bubbling and all this stuff on you. But the recipe calls for water, some type of freshly cut vegetation, a handful of brown leaves. Add a little bit of Himalayan salt or seawater if you want to. Ooh. And close the lid. In 6 months, you're going to have fertilizer that you use.
That's crazy. Yeah. Now, I imagine that it's a broad kind of label, meaning that it's a fertilizer depending on what you put in there, right?
That's correct. So what you have with, and I say six, it'll be done in 6 months. I use mine after 2 weeks because nutrients are already leaching out. But I'm talking like a real getting close to a store-bought quality fertilizer. In 6 months, it's going to be good. In a year, it's solid. Whoa. You'll be using a cup of it in a 5 gallon bucket.
That's awesome.
To feed your plants. That's how condensed it gets. What were you asking, Jordan?
What did I ask? Oh my God, I'm stoned. We're both so stoned. What I asked was, do you target different nutrients depending on what you put in
it?
That's
right.
Yeah, if it's JLF, I imagine there's probably a nitrogen one. There's probably a phosphorus one. What can you use?
Okay, so I call them JLF specifics. Whenever I post stuff and see stuff online, I'll say I'm using a cannabis-specific JLF. That means I'm only putting cannabis product in here. Anything cannabis goes in here.
Smart.
And I'll tell you why in just a second. I do the same thing with tomato specific JLF. I have a corn specific JLF. I have an iris flower specific JLF because I have to grow a bunch of irises.
Whoa.
And then I have a whole bunch of what's called grass and crop cover residue JLF. And then in the book, it's called GCJLF, grass crop cover residue. That just means grass and old fruits and old vegetables. It's whatever's left over, throw it in the bucket. But I've got a lot of different specific JLFs. And the reason I have specific JLFs is this. The reasoning in Jadam philosophy is this. Cannabis has what cannabis needs. Corn has what corn needs. Onions have what onion needs. And I am making an onion JLF also. But if I put my cannabis plants that I'm not using, like I cut up a bunch of male cannabis plants and I put them into my cannabis-specific JLF, and what's the idea is that that plant that I put in there was pretty, had nice green leaves. It was nothing wrong with it. It's full of nutrients, and it's full of the very nutrients that cannabis plant wanted to make it look so pretty, and the microbiology that comes along with it. So when I put that stuff in a bucket, when I put all that cannabis plant in a bucket and I add the water and the microbes and I let it sit, what's happening is all of the nutrient is leaching out of the material. All of the microbes are eating that material and storing those nutrients within their bodies, right? So if they ever get eaten by a shredder, they're going to release those nutrients. But you're having this liquid fertilizer that's starting to leach out nutrient. It's starting to get into the liquid. And I will continually add more cannabis to that 5 gallon bucket. And you will be surprised how much you can fit into a 5 gallon bucket.
Wow.
That's already almost full. I fit 4 male cannabis plants into an already almost full JLF bucket. But I chopped it up real good and it fit.
I love that.
The more cannabis you pack into it, the more nutrient dense it becomes, right? Because there's more nutrient available to the microbes and nutrient to be released and leach out. So once you have the thing packed full of your tomatoes or your cannabis or just a whole bunch of combination of stuff, if you want, you're going to start getting a lot of nutrient rich solution. And you take a cup and you dip it down in there and don't get your finger in it. Or it'll stink for a day for sure. And then you use that cup of juice as your liquid. Now, you can get into all kinds of, well, how much do you use and when do you use it? And I mean, that's a play by ear thing. And it's also kind of, you got to wait a little longer. The longer JLF gets, the better it gets.
So it's always changing, which means it's an art.
Yes. When it's young, you use more. When it's older, you use less. And it's just it's a fun thing to really start to figure out.
That is so freaking cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're using this bucket. Where do you put the bucket?
So the buckets that I use are a 5 gallon bucket. And they are out in the sun. They're right in front of my compost bins. But, you know, the warmer the liquid can get, the easier it is for the microbiology to activate and act up and start to really work.
That was going to be my second question, how to speed it up.
Yeah, heat. Add heat. You know, you can also, you don't have to be this purist of JDAM either, because I'm not a purist. I'm just practicing it, but I'm making it work for me too. And so I have a little bit of liquid fish that I had left over from a couple years ago. Ooh. I added a little bit of that liquid fish into every one of them. You know, it ain't cheating. The book even says add extra nutrients as you wish. Because they want you to steer it towards the crop you're growing.
Wow.
You know, if you're growing blueberries or cannabis, you can steer your nutrients and microbes towards that place. But if you're growing a certain vegetable, the best thing for that vegetable is what's already in that vegetable.
Makes a lot of sense.
And you're just pulling it back out. So that's the JDAM philosophy with that. And that's why you make specific JLFs also.
I think we throw away a lot of cannabis litter as indoor growers, especially. You pick your DFO leaves, and what do you do as a tent grower? I don't know if you know this, okay, Calix, but you stuff it in like a party cup or something, and then you throw it in the trash? No. You're just throwing away nutrients.
Oh gosh, yeah. Yeah. So I go out to a lot of big grows, right? And check on things and see how people are doing and talk and enjoy my time. And all the time at big grows, they have massive brown bags designated for cannabis waste product. And all it is just defoliation almost all the time. And they have to take it and burn it. They have to dispose of it in a certain way because of state rules. What could happen is that place could make so much compost that eventually they're closing the loop on a couple of areas.
Whoa.
But they can't because of regulations, really.
That's horseshit.
They got to burn it.
That makes a lot of sense.
It is.
I didn't know that you had to dispose of it of a certain way. I thought they made you destroy it, but I didn't know that. Burn it in front of me and let me watch. I didn't know it was that serious. But it makes sense. Of course they do.
I don't know the exact specifics, but yeah, they got to destroy it somehow.
Yeah, that's wild shit, though. By the way, I love how I painted like the worst picture using a party cup like next to a, one of those six pack holders for a dolphin to choke on. No, man, you got to think about this stuff. Like you said, close that loop because, you know, home growing, it can really be a big energy draw and stuff like that. And if you're thinking about that sort of thing, just see where you can improve, right? If you can just start composting and not buy compost, you know, that's amazing. If you can reuse your medium, if you can reuse your plant scraps, I think that's a huge step in the right direction. So I love that. The JLF seems really, really simple. Like you said, using the crop itself to feed the crop.
Yep.
Is there any other ways to cheat? Like you said, I know it's a very simple system with just the water and the leaf mold. But if you did want to, could you like add some sugar, for instance, or would that not really help with this separate style? You know what I mean?
Right. So it's a great point you just brought up. So throwing some sugar in one sense is totally opposite of JDAM. Now, I told you, don't be a purist. Try crap out, dude. Try it out. See what happens. But what I can tell you is this. JDAM style is anaerobic. KNF is aerobic, right? Lots of fermenting, lots of using sugars, lots of, you know, things create alcohols over there on that side. On JDAM, there is no sugar. It is just replaced with microbial work on organic matter. And that's all they're doing. They're just breaking the materials down through the microbial work and, you know, instead of pulling it out with the molasses and the sugars and having a sugary solution with KNF, with JDAM, there's just no sugar solution. There's all the nutrients in there. But again, man, the reason behind that is not because of a nitpicky thing. I really don't think there's any enmity between the KNF and JDAM using sugar and not using sugar. It's just that he's trying to create a method that is the cheapest possible way, and you can actually cut brown sugar out if you needed to.
That is a great explanation. And it sounds like it's also just not quite as conducive to this separate style of steeping. You know, if you really want to put it into physical terms, it's like just water steep with some microbes added, and you just give it some time and some heat, and you steep yourself some nutrients.
That's right. And stir it. Give it a stir. Break those materials down. It helps it out a little bit. Don't go nuts with it, you know. I've heard one person say that they will stir some of their, now this is on the KNF side, they'll stir some of their KNF inputs in the same direction because they're trying to keep any kind of fungal chains connected.
Whoa.
Like getting it down to that kind of a thing. I'm like, yeah, that's cool.
Always clockwise.
I just don't have the brains to remember to do that.
That's good, dude. I like that tip. That's really cool. So what's your oldest JLF that you have going right now?
All right. Good question. I just got done with it that last fall. So I want to talk about it first and I'll tell you what I got now. I had one that was 2.5 years old and it was a cannabis specific JLF.
Ooh.
I just kept putting cannabis in there. And that was the very first one I ever did. And after a while, the liquid, after a year, the liquid becomes this emerald green, beautiful looking color. You know, it's just so pretty. But man, it takes a stinky process to get there. You are dealing with putrefaction, decay, rotting things, bacteria that put off some stinky slime, you know. So it's just like when you start, you'd be like, ooh, it's bubbling, cool. Ooh, there's a white biofilm on top. Nice, you know. And you're starting to see all those cool, what are plectals or what are they called? The bubbles that the bacteria go into the biofilm. You start seeing these cool, picturesque looking sites in your JLF. But then, after about 3 months, you start to get into the rot and you start to get into the decay. And you open your lid up and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, that stinks so bad. And yes, it does. It stinks freaking awful. And one thing about Jadam is that we have been taught, if it stinks, it's bad. If it smells good, it's good. And that is true. I remember even my mother, when we were in the gardens one time, I would say, why do you throw all the dead fruit over here to the side and you don't just let it lay where it is? And she goes, my mother's answer is this, and I totally remember it. She said, sweetie, that's loaded with bacteria and viruses, and we're just going to get it out there. And that's what she said, bacteria or funguses or bacteria or virus or something. Mm-hmm. And looking back on that, I'm like, that's what you wanted. We want that bacteria. We want the rot. You know what I'm saying? Because we want the nutrients to just go straight back down in the ground. So one thing that I do with my JLFs and composting is I also do a thing called soil layering. And it's where you don't dig anything. You just imitate nature, which is Jadam's practice. You layer things in, throw leaves down. The next thing, just throw fruit down. Next thing, throw grass down. But just put layers of stuff. Just keep layering it. It's so simple and so easy. I show how to do it on my OK Calyx page. Especially if my compost bins are too full and I don't know what to do with all the fruit, I just start putting it in my no-till bed. Chop it up, cover it up with some leaves, let it go. That's just feeding my worms, basically. You know, creating vermicompost out there.
What does the layering aid in the sense of composting? Why is it beneficial?
So multiple reasons. Number one, that fruit has moisture in it and it's keeping my dirt and my soils moist, which allows my microbiology to work. Secondly, I'm putting nutrient back into my soil. There's nutrient in all that food. Anything that we could eat or that's grown out of the ground, there's nutrient in it. Cut it down, chop it into small pieces so that there's more surface area for bacteria to be exposed to, and dump it just below your plants. Like right now, if you look at my cannabis plants, you will see a ton of cantaloupe and cherry tomatoes, all chopped up, but just laying around. That's adding nutrients. A third thing is it's feeding my shredders. Because what happens is this, when the bacteria is attracted to the fruit and the vegetables, the shredders eat the bacteria mostly. They'll probably eat some of the fruit and food too, but shredders want bacteria. Because a shredder means a worm or a larva or something that just chews and grinds stuff up. But when a shredder comes in and eats that bacteria that's been growing on the fruit, it squeezes the bacteria, basically, in the words of Elaine Ingram, and squeezes out those nutrients, and it uses some of the nutrients, the worm does, and then in its castings, it poops out the rest of the nutrient in plant-available form. And so there's so many reasons to do some of that soil layering. If you got some good living, if you got a good area with some nice dirt with some worms, feeding them, keeping it wet, keeping the nutrients in there, and keeping the cycle of life continuing underground.
Wow, man, that's fucking dope. This has been an awesome, awesome composting and JADAM exploration. We have a little bit of time left. Is there anything else you want to cover? Any tips, general, like, I don't know, big breakthroughs that you've had? Anything new that you're trying? I'd like to hear about that.
Yeah. I've tried one thing this year. I have a volunteer plant that came up, just a plant that came from seed, came up in one of my beds, and I let it go. And this entire spring and summer, I've been testing out different types of specific JLFs and ages and strengths, really, on this plant. And I mean, dumping the natural fertilizer onto it, not just soil drenching, but I'm talking taking the hose and just soaking it with a 5-gallon bucket until it's done to see if I can burn my plants. Now, thus far, you asked me when the oldest JLF is. I had one, a cannabis one that was 2.5 years old. The oldest one I have right now is about 8 months old. And then I have a lot that are 6 months old. March, April, May, June, July. Yeah, around 5 to 6 months old. A bunch of them, like probably 15 or 20 5-gallon buckets full of about 5-month-old JLF. But a lot of this is going to be used for next year and my indoor cannabis growing also. So that's why I'm just making so much in the summertime.
Nice.
So all this JLF that I'm making, I would pour 2-week-old JLF on this plant. And as I got some older JLF, I'm pouring, 1-month-old JLF on it. I'm starting to increase the amount of JLF I mix into the water that I'm using and pour on this plant. And so up to a 5-month-old JLF thus far, nothing has burned that plant. And that plant is gorgeous. It's big and bushy, and it's probably the prettiest one I've got out there. So what I'm doing this year is I'm teaching myself next year what I want to do. Because, again, I have not used any IPM on my plants outside of JLF and JMS, which we haven't even talked about. I've only used these two things, to spray on the plants and to feed. And thus far, my plants look fantastic. So this is the idea behind Jadam. You make your own pesticide. He has a whole list of pesticides you can make. And I don't make any pesticides yet. I use JDAM microbial solution as a pesticide. And what that is where you take some cooked potato. Take, let's say, a pound of potatoes. Cook them or microwave them. Mash them up in a 5-gallon bucket. Add water. Add a little bit of sea salt. Add a handful of those brown leaves for the microbiology. And in 3 days, you're going to have a bubbly, foamy top. And that is full of indigenous microbes that are in your area that are tempered for the temperature you're growing in and for the region you're growing in, right? These microbes right here that I'm growing in, I'm trying to make more of them and dump it onto my plant because that's the microbes that they grow in. That's what they're surrounded with and live with. And so making this JDAM microbial solution is a high microbially populated solution. And the idea is that if pathogens don't have a home on your leaf space,
right,
then you're not going to have pathogens. Like, so you cover them with microbiology. So that's why you use the JMS in Jadam.
Potato
guard.
You
can use it as a soil drench and all that stuff.
That's awesome.
Do what? Man.
I said potato guard. That would be if Monsanto got their hands on it, they would say, yeah, it's brand new. It's called potato guard.
There you go.
I don't know. That's where my brain went.
Don't let them get their hands on this.
That's what's up, man. I love that. I've seen the potato videos where you've got that bucket out there and you're stirring it up for that JMS. Really,
that's
really
right.
Cool shit. Everybody needs to go and follow OK Calyx on Instagram at OK Calyx. Yeah, man. Anything else here before we wrap it up? Anything coming down the pipe other than the breeding stuff? Definitely check out the other episode. If this is the first time you're hearing OK Calyx, go check out the past episode here.
That's right.
But yeah, anything else?
Man, that's it. I think we had a good talk. I enjoyed
yeah,
that.
Dude.
I appreciate you talking to me.
Yeah,
I like to
course,
get this
man.
Info out. I like to get the info out because, like I said, there's something in me that feels like this is the natural way we're moving to anyway. And if I can get this information out, it's going to get us jump started on it anyway. You know, this is a great way to take care of Mother Earth too. If you love nature and you're like, man, I'm tired of climate change and all these things, you know, if that's you, this helps that.
Yep. That's exactly right, man. I love it. I love how passionate you are and how good you are at educating, man. These are jam-packed episodes. Like, you're excited about this shit. So I just like to listen.
I am.
We'll have you back on, man. We'll do a GrowCast TV. We'll do something for sure. And you let us know if there's anything you need from GrowCast.
Yes, I appreciate you a lot, Jordan.
Hell yeah. All right, man. I'll wrap up the show. I'll let you go, though, and then I'll do my little outro, and I will talk to you later, my friend.
Thanks, Jordan.
All right. Take care. That was a thanks, Jordan, I'm sure, but he went robot for a second. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you so, so much. As I said, OK Calyx on Instagram and OK Calyx Genetics is that's where you can find them. That's where you can find them. We're on Instagram, but you can find us at growcastpodcast.com/list/action. Shows you everything we're doing. Growcast Seed Co. up there, of course. Shout out Growcast Seed Co. Make sure to head on over there and check out our menu, our classes, and our membership. Thank you for your support, everybody. I appreciate you just listening to this show. I hope you're doing incredible things in your garden, and I will see you next time on the next GrowCast. Be safe and grow smarter. That's our show. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Thank you to OK Calyx. Give him a follow. Go check him out. A good friend of the show. Quickly became a fan favorite. Before we wrap it up, shout out to Photon Tech, the sexy red high-performance LED lights. You can find them at growcastpodcast.com/photon. Code GROWCAST saves you 10% on some amazing magnetic high-efficiency bar lights. I love my 600-watt. Let me tell you, these things are off the chain. The magnetic bars make it easy to put together, easy to disassemble and reassemble. If one goes out, you can pop it off and mail it back. They'll replace it. It's got a 5-year warranty, and they've got just about the best efficiency and PPF in the game. The 1,000-watt, Shane from Migro said it was too powerful. That's right. You're going to need to dim this thing down unless you have everything dialed in. The PPF is almost 3,000 U-moles, folks. The 1,000 watt, they require CO2 supplementation. They're so powerful. Photon Tech lighting, baby. Code GROWCAST, 10% off. Get the square models if you have a 2x2 or 3x3. Get the 600 watt if you're in a 5x5. The 465 is perfect for a 4x4. And the 1,000 watt is if you're crazy and you want one of the most powerful lights in the game. Code GROWCAST at growcastpodcast.com/photon. That brings you right there. Use those savings and send us a snapshot of your code always to be entered to win free seeds. Thank you to Photon Tech. I love them. They're powerful. They're efficient. They're easy to assemble. Truly one of the best lights on the market. Go and get it, everybody. Code GROWCAST. And that's all, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned. We've got some great content headed your way as we focus on plant health for the rest of the month. We got fun events coming up, classes. Go to growcastpodcast.com/action to see it all. And I'll see you around, folks. Hope you're doing incredible things in your garden. See you next time. Bye-bye.
I'm a dumpster diver, man. I have no pride.